This is Mary Ingleby interviewing Pepe Vaughan on the 9th of July 2013. So if we could just begin, Pepe, by you introducing yourself for me.
My name is Pepe Vaughan. I was born in Gibraltar on the 28th of July 1926. So in other words, I'm just over 21. Okay, I've had a long, varied life. And being of the age I'm, 86, I went through the evacuation processes, which is what I think you're interested in, really.
Well, let me just take... I just wanted to start off by asking you a little bit about your parents and where they came from. Were they Gibraltarians?
My mother was born of a Spanish doctor father and a Gibraltarian mother of Italian extraction. My father was born in Chad in Somerset, where I went to school later on, a place called Ilminster, about 5 miles away from Chad. And he was born there, went to school there, came to Gibraltar with a company called the Eastern Telegraph Company, which was a predecessor of cable and wireless. And he met my mother and married in Gibraltar and lived in Gibraltar for the rest of his life, except for service that he did in the Naval Intelligence branch of the Royal Navy during the war. And I was born in Gibraltar. I had an older brother, was 11 months older than I am, a sister who was 3 years younger than I am, and a brother who was born in Malta when my father was posted to Malta. And he was born in Malta. So all of British extraction. My father was a genuine Englishman from Somerset, and his father was in the Indian Army during the prior to the First Great World War. And they lived in Ilminster, in Somerset, and they were lovely.
I know, I don't live so far away from there. I come from Bristol.
Oh, yeah,
so
Bristol.
It's quite close. Mm.
When I went to do my naval exams for flying, I went to Bristol and we got bombed flat in Bristol, and my mother was so worried she wanted to call the police and find out if I was okay.
I'm not surprised.
Typical mother. Mm. Oh, I'm going to phone the police to find out if he's all right.
Yeah, I can imagine doing that.
I was in a boarding house just to getting my head down. They said, go down to the shelter. I said, no way, I'm going to the shelter. If I'm going to get bombed, I'm going to get bombed. It doesn't bother me, you know.
So let's just talk a little bit. So you were born in Gibraltar, and then have you got any... How old were you when you sent back to England to school?
I went to school where my father went to school, same school as my father. It was the grammar school, 500 years old.
And how old were you then when you were sent to school in England?
I was 14.
So you had your early bit of your childhood in Gibraltar?
Yes, I did. I went to school in Gibraltar and Malta.
So can you tell me, let's talk a little bit about that. About what it was like, what you can remember of that.
What, Malta?
Of being in Gibraltar.
Gibraltar was a wonderful place, it still is. Best place in the world, actually. And I really enjoyed my schooling in the Christian Brothers. They were educated by Christian Brothers, Irish Christian Brothers, a place called Linewall College, and with all the traditions and everything. And it was a boarding school, actually, and some Gibraltarians who lived in Tangier and in Morocco used to come over and board here. But it was a lovely school, lots of tradition, and the Irish masters were Christian Brothers. They were fantastic, they really were.
And what was your family life? Was it sort of half English and half Gibraltarian?
No, very British, actually. Very British. My mother was an English speaker, and she spoke Spanish as a second language. My grandfather was a Spanish speaker. He died very young, about 60 at the time, which was old but young nowadays, you know. And he died in the country of a heart attack, which he had a lot of land, and he hardly practiced because he had lots of land and he got rents and things like that. So. He wasn't on the breadline, so to speak, and he was a lovely, lovely character. And my granny on my mother's side was a Gibraltarian of Italian extraction, and my father's father was ex-Indian Army, lived in Somerset with all the traditions of the ex-Army, retired and things like this, and going out fox hunting and all sorts of
things. The whole English thing.
Yeah.
But what about your day-to-day life in Gibraltar? I mean, so you went to school, and then did you... what did you do, sort of...
We played a lot of sport, actually. Mm. We were very sporty, you know. We were swimming, lots of soccer, cricket. Played cricket as well.
And where did you play at school?
I played cricket in Gibraltar from the school, and soccer from school, and then I was a member of the Gibraltar Cricket Club, a Colt at the time, obviously, the youngest team, and we played at North Front and sometimes on the grounds here in town.
And Gibraltar must have looked a lot different then.
Gibraltar was a quiet place, you know, there were no cars, and there were very few cars. Horse-drawn galleys, which was the main mode of transport, largely was horse-drawn lot of trucks, carts and things like this. And a lot of stuff came in carts from Spain, horse-drawn and donkey-drawn carts from Spain with fruit and vegetables and food. So there was no problem at the frontier in those days, as there is now.
And did your family have a car?
Yes, my father had a car, and my grandfather had a car as well. Well, very few people had vehicles, motor vehicles in those days.
And did people ride horses?
Yes, they did. There was a race course in Gibraltar, amazingly, where the airport is at the moment. And that during the war it was knocked down, and a landing strip was built there. And there was a race course, and the horses came over from Spain to race in the... And there were gymkhanas as well, run by the military, largely. And there was a Gibraltar Racing Club, Mediterranean Racing Club, which was all the traditions of the jockey club in England, with all its rules and regulations and all of it. Very traditional. And there was a grandstand where people used to... Well, since I remember very vaguely, but I remember going to the grandstand where you watch horse races and things like this. A bit primitive, I think, but it was all the silks and all the rest of it, you know.
It sounds grand.
Yeah, it was lovely. It was really lovely. It was quiet and nice and pleasant. And obviously at that age, you didn't bother a lot about the political world and things like this.
And where did you used to swim?
We used to swim off the beaches. Sandy Bay was a military beach, actually, and you had and some civilians used to be allowed to swim from there because they got special permission from Fortress Headquarters. The military controlled everything in Gib at the time. It was a fortress rather than a city as such.
So did you see a lot of military walking around all the time?
Yeah, they used to march around and things like this, and they used to have their traditional parades and casemates and on their own squares and things like that, you know? So they were... They were very prominent, the military, in those days.
And what do you think the relationship was between the military and the Gibraltarians?
It was okay. I think the working class Gibraltarians, if you want to put it that way, didn't mix at all with the military. It was the professional classes rather who used to mix with the military, and the people in shipping, people in the profession, lawyers, doctors. They mixed a little bit. Not a lot, but they did.
And was that the same with the sort of governor and all those people? Was there a sort of hierarchy?
Well, the governor was a powerful man. He made the laws. He did everything, you know, until the year just during the war, actually, is when the feeling of emancipation ruling your own destiny politically started to build up, and when the evacuation happened, and that triggered off a feeling for closeness amongst the civil population. The people, the wives and the kids were away, the husbands were worried about them, and the, they were always not agitating, but worried about the welfare of their loved ones who were in England, in Madeira, in Jamaica. They were all over the place, and largely the population that was evacuated from Gibraltar went to London, where all the bombing went on. So they moved them out after a lot of agitation, because they said, well, why bring us to London? You know, don't put us in the middle of the bomb, send us to the country. So they sent them to Northern Ireland, most of them.
Right, I'm going to talk to you about that in a minute. That's great. I just want to ask you two more questions about Gibraltar, about that time.
Yes.
Two things. One was there an issue about water? Can you remember where you got your water from?
Water from the catchment area. There were huge tanks hewn out of the rock in the bottom, and there were galvanized iron sheets on the east side of the rock, and all channeled into huge catchment area of tanks inside the rock. I don't know how many gallons, called millions of gallons of water. And there was one law which was passed about 150, 200 years ago, that anybody building a house in Gibraltar had to have an underground tank to collect rainwater from the roofs, and they had all these pipes alongside. And if you go along the old buildings here, you'll probably see pipes going down into the ground, and you say, well, I wonder why where these pipes are going. They were underground tanks, built underground tanks to supply themselves with their own water. The water for the services, the sewage and the loos and things like this, was salt water. So there was a two water system, fresh water for drinking and cooking and washing, and salt water for flushing.
And do you remember going to collect water?
To where?
Did you have to go and collect your water yourselves?
No, the water came from the roof of the house and down into the underground tanks.
And then that went round in the plumbing.
Where they lived. In tenement buildings, they used to collect water from collection points in various areas in Gibraltar. Willis's Road, for example, there was a tap that came in from the catchment area, and people used to pay a penny for a couple of buckets of water.
And whereabouts did you live? Where was your family?
I lived in Library Ramp, but it's called Library Ramp. I was in Garrison Library up there.
Just been there this very morning.
Yeah, nice, good position, because it was out of the main hurly-burly of Main Street, and within walking distance of town, and the church was next door, the hospital was a bit further down the road. It was a lovely area, actually.
And what about, I wanted to ask you, if you had any memories of the Spanish Civil War, of people coming?
Vaguely.
Tell me what you can vaguely remember.
The Spanish Civil War was the result of the growing of a sort of quasi-communist party in Spain, or socialist party in Spain, that wanted to take over all the land that the wealthy people had and give it away to the tenant farmers. And the landowners objected to this, and as they were powerful people in a strong political position, they started agitating against these demands from the, in inverted commas, socialists as such, as they were called, which were extreme left-wingers, rather largely. And as a result of that, there was turmoil in the political world in Spain. And Franco, who was a general, was called upon by other military high-ups to lead a so-called coup to oust these extreme left-wingers from power. And he did so with his Moroccan garrisons from coming over from Morocco, from Spanish Morocco, Tetuán and Ceuta and places like that, and Larache. And he was thrown over. He was in the Canary Islands at the time, General Franco. And he was very young, I don't remember exactly his age, but he was very young for a general in Spain. And he was subsequently selected as head of state by his fellow generals in Salamanca, a place called Salamanca, when they invaded Spain, and out in the whole of the left wing system in Spain, which was.
Do you have any memories yourself of people? I mean, a lot of refugees came over from La Linea, didn't they?
One of my aunties, my mother's sister, married a Spaniard from Jerez, who was used to deal in horses, horse racing and things like this. And he was a right winger, what they call trequetes, and he was shot actually on the 28th in a skirmish in La Linea. He was shot and he was brought over to Gibraltar by by the Spanish ambulance services and plonked in the frontier, and he was let in. But he was dead by the time, and he's actually buried in Gibraltar.
Oh, that's an interesting story.
He was a right winger, yeah. Trequete, they used to wear a red beret. They were a part of a group, they were the Falangists, and there was another group called the Trequetes, which was a sort of royal, they backed the royalty rather than anything else. So the Falangists were a sort of socialist right wing party.
But you yourself, as a little boy, because you would have been a very little boy.
I was 12 at the time, you know, I hardly knew what was going on. I just followed the radios, were all over it, you know, when the government in power, which was the left wing government, the proper government in power, which was overthrown by Franco, you used to hear it on the radio. We've won a battle in Teruel, and we've won this and that. But basically, I didn't follow the proceedings as I did later on in life with the World War and the Second World War and things like that. But it was very difficult and very cruel. And brother against brother and families. Oh, it's terrible, really terrible.